Join the conversation on Cape Talk.
In Legal Talk today, we're looking at the ongoing effort to expand the use of DNA evidence in the fight against crime. My guest is really something of a DNA crusader. She has spent nearly 20 years now fighting to have a decent DNA criminal database set up in this country and to have it maintained and utilized in the fight against crime. It's a mission that was born out of terrible personal trauma, but one which has led to substantial positive steps forward in our lawmaking and in the prosecution of criminal cases. Her name is Vanessa Lynch. She's Director of DNA for Africa, which is a non-governmental platform that helps to lobby for policy change and to raise awareness of the importance of forensic DNA evidence. And she's speaking to us via Zoom from Istanbul, en route to Kenya, where she's about to take part in a symposium around forensic DNA profiling in crimes against humanity and gender-based violence. Vanessa, thank you so much. We really appreciate your making time to speak to us in the middle of a very busy trip. Welcome to Cape Talk.
Hi, Pepper. Thank you so much. Great to be in touch with the South African listeners today.
Thank you. By way of the briefest of introduction, listeners should know Vanessa is a lawyer by training, but she was never intending to work in criminal law. She was, in fact, working in commercial law when her family was affected by a tragedy that really set her on this new trajectory. Vanessa's father was shot dead during a home invasion in the early 2000s. And despite the fact that there was extensive potential forensic evidence at the scene, it was never collected or processed, and the case never sold as a result. Vanessa, a terrible tragedy for your family, and we, as always, remain sorry for that loss. But the news from police that the case was being closed due to lack of evidence, that really was the moment that the direction of your life changed, wasn't it?
Yes, Pippa. It certainly was. And at the time, I wasn't even sure how I was going to take it forward, other than just looking around the world and saying, well, what's the best methodology, the highest evidentiary value in solving cases? And DNA really, it's not the silver bullet, and we always have to remember that all forms of evidence are important, and we still need a criminal justice system to prosecute a case. But DNA really is one of the most reliable and the strongest form of evidence available to us. So it's really encouraging, albeit it's taken a long time, that South Africa has DNA laws now. We have a DNA database, and we really are seeing the DNA database linking serial offenders, not only of murders, but specifically of rapes.
Yeah. I mean, at the time you got into this field, Vanessa, that database didn't exist. I mean, you personally and others who've helped you along the road have played a major role in getting us to the point where it was set up and the funding was created and the labs were created to process the evidence. And it started off really, really well. And then I know there was a change of political leadership in the police, amongst others, and things kind of fell by the wayside. We've all heard in recent years the reports of the backlog of DNA processing in this country. My understanding is that the situation has improved a little bit, though. Do you want to give us an update of where we are right now?
Yes, sure. You correctly stated that initially when the laws were passed, there was great enthusiasm from government and there was a lot of funding, and there really was no backlog to talk of. Over 1 million profiles were initially added onto the DNA database in the first few years of the DNA Act. And then there was withdrawal of funding by the Ministry of Police, and this really led to an accumulation of DNA cases that weren't being processed. Last year, this reached a crisis, and there were over 300,000 cases which hadn't been processed. And obviously, these kind of delays really do deny victims justice.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of lobbying had to be done, and the government have really come to the party, so to speak. They have allocated more funding. They've started building a new laboratory in the Eastern Cape, which is state of the art and should be finished next year.
Great.
They've committed to a zero backlog by November of this year. Well, that's quite ambitious. It's still an intention. And recently, in the last couple of weeks in Parliament, they did show that the reduction in terms of the backlog has begun. So even though they've ring-fenced the number that was previously in backlog, so they're not really counting the cases coming in,
Yeah. They
are reducing that probably by about 35% already. So, you know, contracts have been fulfilled. We're starting to see more hits on the database again, and we're moving in the right direction, and that's always good.
Vanessa, the one important part of this is the effort to collect DNA samples from the people who are already with within the system who were serving time in prison. And again, progress was made, but it didn't go far enough before the wheels fell off a little bit. And I know you've been pushing very hard to try and move things forward in terms of the updated legislation that is needed to unlock that part of the question. Has any progress been made?
Yes, correct, Papa. The I call it the convicted offender bill. Initially, in the first 2 years of the DNA laws being passed in 2015, we were able to sample convicted offenders, but they had to be done within 2 years. When that two-year period expired, it was a simple amendment that had to be signed to extend that period, and that wasn't done. It's taken all of that time for the government to finally sign that amendment, which came into play. Well, it actually isn't operational yet, but the National Assembly did approve it a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And as soon as that's promulgated, which shouldn't take too much longer, I think it's got one more rubber stamp from the National Council of Provinces and Parliament, we will then be able to sample convicted offenders. And the reason it's so important is a number of the prisoners actually are serial offenders, and they can be linked to other cold cases and serial cases. And we've seen this in the past, where unrelated cases are linked from a prisoner to up to 30 to 60 other cases, often rape.
I mean, Vanessa, I just want to cite one example here. I've heard you in a previous speech talking about a case of somebody who was, if I remember it correctly, was in prison for a relatively minor crime of assault of some kind, serving a quite short sentence. But because his data, his DNA sample was taken in that initial two-year period, it popped up as related to something like 30 unsolved rape cases, many of which were the rapes of children. And as a result, somebody who was clearly a serial rapist is still in prison, who would have otherwise walked free. I mean, that case to me has always demonstrated so clearly why there is a need to do this preemptively, not just in terms of solving crimes that have already happened.
Yes, it is. And I do cite that case and the other cases, I mean, up to 60 cases. I know there's even one recently up to 100 cases.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also can't be proud of this. I mean, that's 30 rapes, that's 60 cases, and those are the reported ones. What we need to be doing is we need to be identifying these offenders at a much earlier stage so that we can save tomorrow's victims. And we haven't really got to that point yet, and that's what we need to get to. We need to ensure that our capacity is increased. The more samples that can be analyzed and those profiles added to the database, the quicker we are able to identify our criminal population and prevent us saying, oh, wow, we've linked them to 30 or 60 rapes. We don't want that. We want to identify them early on and ensure that they serve time and that as I say, tomorrow's victims are saved from what currently is happening in South Africa.
Yeah. Very good question being asked on email by our listener, Mickey, asking, can private labs help address the backlog at all, Vanessa? Is that in fact happening?
Yes, they are looking at private-public partnerships. I know they're looking at some of the universities, specifically with reference samples, which are very easy. It's a very simple, they're not difficult crime scene samples, and there's no chain of custody issues really with reference samples because they can, you know, essentially be retaken. So I know that the government have been looking at this. I haven't heard that they've actually decided on certain laboratories, but I know that that is definitely going to be the next step because, you know, all over the world, private laboratories are used to assist state laboratories and they do it very well and it increases capacity. And I really do hope that in the next year or so that the government take the next step towards that.
Yeah. We're talking to Vanessa Lynch of DNA for Africa. If you've got any questions for her, by the way, you're very welcome to send a voice note or give us a call on 021-446-0567. Now, speaking of partnerships and collaboration, Vanessa, you're en route to a conference happening in Nairobi, Kenya later this week that is looking specifically at the use of forensic DNA profiling with regard to crimes against humanity and gender-based violence. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the event?
Thanks, Pippa. Yes, it's really exciting. DNA for Africa, which is the organization which I represent, we're hosting a conference together with the international communities of the Red Cross, which is basically people know as the ICRC. And what we're doing is not only talking about how we can improve the situation throughout Africa, specifically in the East African community with regards to passing laws like we've done in South Africa, building DNA databases, but also to celebrate the incredible skills that we have within Africa. The people that are speaking at this conference, they work under extraordinarily limited circumstances with low resources. They do exceptional work that they really need to be revered. And this is what we're hoping to do in conjunction with learning from each other and learning how within Africa, where we do have challenging circumstances, how exceptional people are in overcoming this. Yeah. And it's also a call for investment. You know, a number of these countries don't have enough funding to implement these kind of programs. And I know there is a lot of funding that goes into these programs. So hopefully that will also be something that can be highlighted. So please follow us at DNA for Africa and see the incredible. It's a free online webinar that people can log into and hear and listen to what we are doing in Africa. And they really will be blown away by the caliber of people speaking and what they are doing within Africa.
Vanessa, the one thing we haven't mentioned, which I think perhaps we should bring in here, we've been talking very much about the use of DNA in solving crimes and preventing crimes of the future. But there's another use for it, and that's application with a more sort of humanitarian bent to it, of that it can be used to identify, you know, the nameless body that is sitting in a mortuary abandoned, not knowing who it belongs to, and somewhere belongs to a family who are wondering where their loved one is. It can be used in looking for missing persons, for example. There is that other strain to the use of DNA, which shouldn't be overlooked as well. Not so.
Absolutely, Pippa. And there's so many uses, and this is what's going to be highlighted, is that, you know, the trauma of a family who, first of all, has lost or there's a missing person, who's unable to be united to that person because there's no form of identification. Often these cases can be solved within 24 hours if DNA is utilized, which it isn't. And we're hoping that by conjoining some of the databases within these countries, because they've got quite porous borders,
yep,
that it can also help and assist towards the missing and the dead and give families closure. And human trafficking is also another aspect, you know, that's related to that. That's a huge issue within Africa. So, you know, these are all the different areas that we're going to be highlighted at this conference too, as to the different uses, not only in crime, but humanitarian aspects too.
Mm. Vanessa, is there any resistance to the growth and broadening of our DNA database on privacy and ethical grounds? I know it's something that always comes up when you discuss anything to do with a database of any kind having the keys to your information. This is very, very deeply personal information. Is that a sort of an obstacle you have to battle?
No, not really. I think there's an understanding that a forensic DNA profile, they only use a limited number of markers in your DNA profile, which don't code for any information. Laws, in fact, protect the information because they are only used for the purposes of crime or humanitarian purposes, as opposed to not having laws and using it, you know, DNA for crime resolution. So laws, in fact, are very protective. And in a country like South Africa, where we have such a strong constitution, you know, there's always that level of privacy, and there's always that higher constitution that will always protect somebody's privacy. So even in South Africa, when we first passed the laws, there was very little resistance towards promulgating this act. And in fact, as I said, one of the things that were mentioned was that laws actually are far more protective than not having laws. Mm. As we work throughout Africa, the resistance is more around funding. And it's really been extraordinary working with the presenters and with organizations and with the administrations now, even putting this conference together, that there's just such a will and there's such a motivation to implement forensic DNA profiling in these countries for all of those reasons. And it's just funding is probably the biggest issue and the biggest barrier.
Yeah.
So we haven't come across, you know, the privacy issue because of the, you know, the fact that a state-held database and the nature of a forensic DNA profile is such that there is no invasion of privacy in that regard.
Before we're out of time, one last question. I mean, all the best best DNA databases and labs with all the funding and the technicians in the world won't help if the collection of the samples is compromised or doesn't happen at all, as was the case in your father's murder. Is enough being done to train the ordinary policemen on the ground who are dealing with crime scenes in how to preserve and collect forensic evidence?
Absolutely, and I've always maintained that, and that was always part of when I had the DNA project and was lobbying government, is that I always addressed that. And this is actually also going to be addressed at this conference, and specifically with collection of evidence and sexual offences,
yeah.
Is that often the kits are very complicated, they're very expensive, and in fact there's an amazing combination of a professor from the UK and Wangu Kanya, who's a rape survivor from Kenya, who have worked together towards producing a low-cost DNA collection kit for rape survivors that doesn't have hundreds of different modules in it and is very simple to use, and there's no degradation, etc. And these are the kind of resources that we need to look at within Africa. When we have challenging environments, we need to look outside the box and say, well, how can we overcome them? Because correctly stated, if you can't get the collection right, then all of the investment into laws and infrastructures and laboratories really becomes superfluous if you're not getting a good sample to the laboratory. So yes, that is always something that has to be looked at and always something that we keep well within the conversation.
Vanessa, it's been wonderful talking to you today, and I hope next time you're in Cape Town we can get you into studio for a longer conversation. It's a fascinating subject that we've only scraped the surface of today, but all strength to your arm and good luck with the conference in Nairobi this week. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks, Pippa, and do follow us at DNA for Africa. It'll be great to have people's support and their comments.
Vanessa Lynch, Director of DNA for Africa.